Hello and welcome to another edition of Ofsted Talks. My name is Mark Leach, and today we're going to be talking about English. We've recently published our subject report looking at the teaching of English in primary and secondary schools, and I'm joined today by Kirsty Godfrey and Zoe Enser. Hello, nice to have you with us.
Hello. Hi, Mark.
So, we've published this report. It has quite a lot to say about the different components of English teaching right across the age groups. Shall we start by just talking through some of the main findings of the report?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the really good news stories is about reading. We found that the teaching of reading has improved, and that is really to do with all of those things that have happened over perhaps the last 10 years. So we've had the phonics screening check, we've got systematic synthetic phonics that's been put into the national curriculum. We've had our focus in Ofsted on looking at reading. So in every inspection with primary age pupils, we do an early reading deep dive. And there's also the English hubs and all of their work. So lots of policy, government changes and our Ofsted focus have really turned schools' attention to the importance of teaching reading. And we know that that's been a real success story. Obviously, there's more to do. Particularly when children get to that point of finishing phonics and moving on. We know there sometimes can be less well understood really about how that curriculum to develop their fluency is considered. And sometimes there's a rush towards going straight to reading comprehension and what those tests might look like at the end of key stage. So that's an area for further improvement, as is that teaching for those children who might be behind with their reading when they enter key stage two. Sometimes they don't get sufficient practice to really embed that knowledge or the right sort of practice to make sure that they quickly catch up.
And do we see that strength in reading taken through into secondary school, Zoe? Because I'm interested as well. We talk about sort of the mechanics of how do you teach children to read, but there's part of how they then use that to access the rest of the curriculum, but also how do they learn to love reading, read for pleasure? Is that something that we're seeing carried through into secondary school?
Well, there's two very different strands there in what we're talking about when we think about the texts that pupils encounter and their engagement with reading. You're absolutely right. That access to reading and the mechanics of reading is going to make a huge difference to how they can then access the curriculum more widely. But we've got that reading culture, that development of that interest in reading, that habit of reading, that is being strongly developed in secondary schools. There are lots of opportunities in tutor time where teachers have really thought about what is it that we want our pupils to encounter, what kinds of texts, non-fiction, short stories, poems, that's all being pulled together as part of that. And then the separate strand around that is what text do we study for literature? And it was really pleasing to see that there'd been a lot of thought that had taken place around what were the most appropriate texts for pupils to then use as a vehicle for that literary analysis, that understanding of the kind of critical approach that we take to text, because they serve different purposes. We've got the texts that we enjoy and share and talk about, and then we've got the texts that we also study as part of that. And that had been a real shift, and they'd really thought about the concepts that they wanted pupils to understand and which texts were going to be allowing them to think about things like themes, different genres, and considering aspects like kind of authorial intent and how that would be preparing them for GCSE and beyond.
Okay, so that's a really positive picture around reading. The other key component, of course, is writing, and it's quite interesting. Children today have a sort of different way of engaging with the world than certainly I had many years ago. And I wonder whether that does impact on basic writing skills. Kirsty, looking at primary school, looking at the teaching of handwriting, for example, something I was never any good at.
Yeah, we didn't tend to see schools giving it enough teaching and practice to help pupils get a high level of fluency with their spelling and their handwriting. So that transcription element of the curriculum is something that is perhaps underdeveloped in schools. For example, teachers are rarely using dictation as a way to help pupils practice their spelling and handwriting. And sometimes instead, what pupils are asked to do is do extended pieces of writing well before they've actually been given that knowledge and skills through the teaching that they've received. So as an example, you might have children being asked to write about their weekend or write a story or a character description, but in actual fact, they aren't able to form the letters yet or spell the words that they want to write. So there can be that tendency to rush straight into things that are much more an advanced level. So the main message really is about providing enough practice so that they're teaching first, but then sufficient practice so that children become fluent with the transcription, just like they need to become fluent with their reading, because, of course, it avoids that working memory overload then, and they can really focus on what it is that they want to communicate through their writing when they're not having to think about how to form those letters and spell those words.
I was going to agree from a secondary school point of view, because although a lot of pupils are coming up to secondary and they've mastered that and they have got that ability to use that transcription well, there are still some pupils, particularly post-COVID, who are arriving at secondary school where they really struggle with that. And as Kirsty said, that places that increased load on their working memory, and it's then really difficult for them to tackle those even more challenging tasks. So it's about making sure they are getting the most purposeful practice at that point to be able to again, you know, access that wider curriculum, to be able to make use of that. And the other thing I would say with writing, particularly in secondary, is to, you know, that the strongest schools are really thinking about giving them those wider opportunities to write as well once they're ready to do so, once they've got that knowledge, and that includes knowledge of the topic, to be able to then write exciting things, stories and poems and descriptions that are not constrained necessarily by the GCSE requirements, that are broadening that out and giving them that opportunity, but equally giving them the tools, the knowledge, the skills that they'll be able to do that with.
It's really interesting that you mentioned COVID there, and it's a fairly obvious point, and I hadn't really thought of it, but remote education, not being able to essentially, you know, if you're practicing writing, showing your book to your teacher and have them work with you on how you improve your handwriting. Have we seen that as a kind of a widespread issue right across the country?
Following COVID, yeah, writing was something that schools really reported to us that had become much more of a challenge for them, you know, just in the amount that children could write and their speed, just because they hadn't had that practice. They'd often been working on keyboards and computers and not having, you know, that writing with a pencil or a pen. So, it's something that, but actually I think it's also about schools have not perhaps thought about what that curriculum needs to look like in those small steps to gain that really important foundational knowledge to be able to become fluent, so that their working memory isn't overloaded.
I think that's really, really interesting. I mean, is there a bigger shift because people are so used to working on keyboards? Obviously, there's something there about developing, as you say, the kind of muscle skills required to write with a pen, but also spelling as well. Everything's automated. Everything's checked for you. Is that must be a challenge for teachers when children are used to that sort of way of growing up?
I think I'd just come in there from the secondary point of view, because, again, I think there can be an assumption that with young people they are using keyboards, but what they're tending to be using more likely is telephones and the apps on the phone. So when it comes to then switching and saying, OK, so you've got a handwriting difficulty here, you're finding that difficult to do that at speed, many of those same pupils will still be finding it really difficult to pick up that other touch typing approach, and that places a different kind of load on their working memory for them to then be thinking about all of the other component parts of writing. They've got to think about the vocabulary they'll use, they've got to think about the content, they've got to think about the syntax and the grammar, and now they're using a keyboard as well, and that makes it even more challenging for some of those pupils. Whereas if they are developing that transcription and that's developing over time and they're being given the precise opportunities to be taught that and to practice that, then those pupils again will be much more fluent and able to pull everything together to compose a piece. But it needs to be stepped and staged. It needs to take time.
Talking about how children communicate with each other, brings us on, I suppose, to the other part of English, which is a spoken language. And in the report, we've said that spoken language isn't perhaps quite such a rosy picture as we're seeing in reading, for example.
I was going to say, I just want to make really clear, when we're talking about that, we're talking about the spoken language element of the national curriculum. And we're really thinking about, what does it mean to develop that curriculum where pupils are being given, again, the vocabulary, the structures, the opportunities to practice that building up over time? And sometimes it can seem that pupils haven't got the confidence to be able to speak. And of course, some of that comes with practice and those opportunities, but equally that comes from their knowledge. What does it mean to engage in a debate and a discussion? How might you respond to questions that are framed like that? And so thinking about how that again is taught and practiced over time is really important. And that starts at early years, doesn't it, Kirsty?
And it also really helps children with their later reading and writing and becoming independent with both of those, if they've got that spoken language to draw upon, because then they know how to compose a sentence orally. They can obviously do that in writing. So it is really about providing enough time for children to be able to practice those important skills and really valuing some of the things like story time and the discussions that take place about stories, and making sure, of course, that all children get involved in those discussions, not just those ones who are will engage more readily because they've already got a lot of that knowledge and will find it easier to be able to contribute. So it's really about adults being very proactive about making sure everybody gets the practice that they need in that foundational knowledge that will support them with their later reading and writing.
And when we move into secondary then with spoken language, Zoe, what does good look like? What are we seeing the really good schools doing?
The really good schools are kind of thinking about how they might draw on the models and examples that pupils have seen and experienced. So if they're learning about things like rhetoric as part of their nonfiction and exploration of speeches and thinking about how they're presented, how are they then translating into what pupils are doing? Have they seen those opportunities? Are teachers modelling them for them? And where they are, that's where the pupils are more confident and are able to tackle those kind of more challenging ways of speaking that they've got to use there.
So thinking about what good schools are doing, how are schools that teach English really well, how are they picking up on some of the struggling pupils who perhaps aren't where they need to be with their reading and their writing and their spoken language? What sort of interventions are being put in, Zoe?
Well, I think the first thing is schools being able to really be diagnostic and quite forensic about what are the barriers that those pupils experience. So is it about a gap in their phonics? It may or may not be at that stage. Is it about their fluency around that? Are they able to blend and can they do that? Is it something about vocabulary? Is it about background knowledge? And they're really thinking about those areas and identifying them. And once they have identified them, that's when they bring in that really targeted approach. The biggest challenge, I would say, is when you've got a lot of pupils who are coming into your school from various different primary partners who might have different gaps in their learning and their understanding. And so taking that time to really think about that, as opposed to perhaps using more blanket approaches, which can be useful for those pupils to continue to build their kind of fluency in different areas. But those who are in the most need, they really need that same kind of targeted provision that we would perhaps see at primary school.
Okay. And in primary school, I think, you know, it's right from the very beginning. It's about schools that do a really great job are the ones that make sure that all pupils keep up with the pace of the curriculum, so that they don't need to have that catch up and those sorts of interventions at a later stage as often. So it's really about the, you know, that day to day assessment and spotting straight away which children have grasped it and who needs a bit more help and a bit more practice right there in that lesson, ready for the next day. And also, you know, it is a challenge for schools because different children will take a different amount of practice to secure the exact same knowledge as their peers, and therefore trying to provide the right amount of practice for every single child is always a challenge. And so, you know, going into each new year group we've got to just resist that temptation to try and expect children to do too much, but make sure we go back to the point that they are in the curriculum and make sure they're really secure with that in those basics so that they do become fluent and it doesn't hold them back. Otherwise, what we do find is that gaps tend to widen rather than close.
Thank you. And in most of the reports that we've done looking at different subjects, we talk about the importance of continued professional development for teachers. What does that look like in English?
This was one of our key recommendations, because there's been some fantastic work that's happened around reading and to understand what we mean by early reading, that development of the phonics programmes, and then taking that up through. And as I say, in literature, teachers have really thought about the concepts that they want pupils to encounter. But now it's about that time to really think about, what do we mean with that curriculum for spoken language? What do we need to build on from primary into secondary about their writing? How are we going to see where perhaps some of those gaps are or areas that just need strengthening? They might know it, but they need to be, have that strengthened. So some time for teachers to really sit and think about that, to consider how they would plan for it, and indeed that support more widely for what actually that does look like, and that sharing of best practice.
That's interesting. Thank you. Thank you both. And before we finish, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I just wanted to give a really big thanks to the schools who welcomed us in, and it was a real privilege to spend that time talking to them about their practices and finding out more about their contexts.
Thank you, Kirsty and Zoe. That was really interesting. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. If you have any views about how Ofsted goes about its work, you can take part in the Big Listen. We want to hear from parents and from professionals about every aspect of our work. You can find more about it at gov.uk/Ofsted Big Listen. Please like and follow us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll be back again soon with another Ofsted Talks.
Ofsted Talks.
Ofsted Talks.
Ofsted Talks. Ofsted Talks.